Ever try to get into one of Advertising Week's amazing sessions and suddenly hear that the room is at capacity? Now you can still experience it in real time. Listen to that keynote or panel as a live audio stream in the Advertising Week app, powered by Live365. Advertising Week Radio features sessions, podcast clips, curated music, and more, both during the shows and year-round. Visit aw.live365.com for easy access instructions. Live365, the world's audio.
Welcome to Great Minds for this rare but very welcome in-person record here at our studios down at Advertising Week World Headquarters with our beloved parent company, Emerald. We're here in our studio, and we don't get to do this very often anymore, Issa, in person. We live in that remote world. So I'm thrilled when you suggested, actually, to do it in person. Thanks to Colin and our team here in the studio for making it possible. So a warm welcome. I guess it's become an annual Emerald slot here on Great Minds with Issa Joanna. He is the president of Connections for Emerald, and delighted to get a chance to spend some time with you here. So welcome.
Thank you, Matt, and it's great to be here. I'm probably employee 4 or number 5 of Emerald to be here. So really excited to be here and look forward to chatting with you.
Well, this is just terrific. So Issa, one of the great universities that doesn't get talked about as much as the great American universities, we have such a, you know, American-centric view of the world here in the United States, is McGill up in Canada. And a great, great school. I'd love to start our conversation by talking about remembrances of McGill and how that helped, you know, put you on your pathway forward.
Oh, absolutely. You're bringing back some great memories of McGill. So I grew up in the capital of Canada, Ottawa, which is about 2 hours away from Montreal. And in my family, it was either be a doctor, be an engineer, or be a failure. So I decided to be an engineer. McGill was one of those schools that really was interesting to me because of its international footprint. A significant number of international students attend McGill. I love the city of Montreal. It's sort of a European city in the middle of North America. And the education was excellent. Great campus right in the middle of downtown, and kind of the right balance between being part of Canada. And so English was dominant within the student population, but we were living in a community that was primarily Francophone. So it was a really good balance of culture, education. I have to admit, though, that engineering wasn't really my passion, and sort of that discipline that I intended to go on post-graduation. So I survived it. I was resilient. I was able to make it work and was able to graduate, but it certainly kind of pointed me in the direction of business versus engineering as a career path.
And Montreal, just as you alluded to, a wonderful city, a real epicenter globally of creativity, technology. We did something years ago with the Cirque du Soleil people who come out of there. We had Daniel Lamour, the CEO for many, many years, speak at Advertising Week. He basically told a wonderful story about how the Love Show was created, which just closed. The Mirage, I see, is now closing, which was Wynn's first great hotel in Las Vegas. What do you think it is about? Is it just the American century? We don't give credit to Montreal is a wonderful city, Toronto, Quebec City, old Quebec City in particular, also very European. Coming from where you do, from Ottawa, I think we're missing the boat on a lot of the great stuff that's happening just up north from us.
I mean, I think to an extent, yes. You know, to another extent, Canada is about a tenth of the size of the U.S., and our population is the size of California, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So we're smaller. We tend to be very close to the border with the U.S. So there are a lot of similarities, you know, I would say, in terms of culture. You know, there are unique aspects. I think Montreal, Quebec City are unique in terms of, from a cultural perspective, Vancouver and Toronto, I think, bring something different. So absolutely. But I think, you know, given the size of the U.S. and the dominance of the U.S., it tends to be, you know, very much about what's happening within the U.S., but, you know, absolutely some great cities and great culture in Canada.
Yeah, we're going to Ottawa actually this year. My soon-to-be nephew just got traded to the Ottawa Senators.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're going to Ottawa to see him play. Okay, so you graduate and you end up at a great, great company, the name Ross Perot. Some of
exactly,
us will remember,
yeah.
Some will not, but talk about that little tenure. You spent about 3 years at EDS.
Actually, I spent about 9 years at EDS.
9 years?
I did, yeah. So I joined just at the time that General Motors was spinning off EDS after the acquisition from Ross Perot. I joined EDS working for General Motors, actually, on the plant floor. Did a number of projects, plant floor systems, so I would say engineering oriented, with some development and graphic work. And within 2 to 3 years, I sort of kind of formulated my plan around really wanting to be on the business end of it. And so I did my MBA part time while I was at EDS, and I progressively did more leadership roles. Web application development was my role just before I jumped into my role prior to joining American Express, which was leading about 100 employees in IT, happened to be an IT department of an outsourced company. So leading that team through the transformation from the fragmented systems to ERP systems and the upgrade of the hardware, and you know that transition that was very common within IT, which was kind of a 3-5 year cycle. So I took them through that 3-5 year cycle. My experience at EDS, and I do have to mention a gentleman by the name of John Rigi, who is exceptionally supportive and a real mentor, who gave me a number of opportunities. You know, when I look at my career, I'd probably say I was ready for 5% of the roles that I took on, both in terms of experience and knowledge, and having someone to take that risk, believe in you, be there to support you is incredibly important in career growth. And, you know, it's something that certainly positioned me well, leaving EDS and being recruited into American Express, and something that I'm still thankful for.
Today's world, remote, such an important part of the business equation today. I am not a fan. I like to come to work. I like to sit. I love what we're doing now, sitting together in the same room at the same time. At the heart of what you do today for Emerald, but really going back to what you did in the meetings and events division at American Express for a long period of time, it's about creating that live connection, the live experience. You start off engineering, more science background, realize that's not for you, want to go into business. You find yourself in a world where the experience and the human connection becomes central to everything. Talk about that journey to the meetings and events world at American Express, and that's now really who you are. It's you're sitting at that center of putting people in a room together, creating experiences, creating connection, creating business. But talk about that journey, because a little different from your roots.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before that, I do want to talk about the comment that you made about sort of the loss of face-to-face, I guess, experience from a working perspective. And I very much agree with you. I think that for more senior, more experienced, that workforce, I think, thrives in a flexible environment where you have the maturity, you have the experience, you have the trust with your coworkers and your team to deliver, and you have the track record. Where I'm finding it to be a real challenge is I feel that we're almost losing a generation of young employees who haven't had that experience, who start their first role sitting at home in their parents' basement or in a very small condo, looking to connect with a new company, a new mission, a new vision. How do you build that? How do you build that rapport? How do you build that bond, that connection to the brand, the learnings that you have from being in a meeting that you're not supposed to be in, being, you know, brought into a meeting just to be there because you're in the office, or having that connection, that, you know, that chat at 5:30 p.m. just before everyone heads out, and you're able to see your leader on the way out to the elevator or have a coffee. So those kinds of things, I think, we're really missing. And I worry for the new generation that hasn't had that experience, and I'm afraid that it will be a longer journey for them to grow, to develop, to mature, and to be able to take on more senior roles and contribute. So I absolutely agree with you. I think there's an opportunity there, and I think as business leaders, we need to also figure out how do we create solutions and pathways for young people to grow.
Yeah, and I think the conversation has gotten all mixed up around, you know, work-life balance. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're talking about how you learn, how you grow, the serendipity of chance, right?
Exactly.
I guess that's sort of redundant when I'm saying serendipity of chance. But, you know, the best stuff, and I'm going to guess that we see the world similarly here, the best stuff is the stuff that's not on your calendar. It's the stuff that just happens. You know, Colin, who's with us today helping us record this, you know, I'll see him and I'll say, hey, I just thought of something. Or I'm trying to figure this out. You got a minute. Help me think this through. I can't tell you how many times Dana, who used to sit outside my office when we were up in Midtown, you know, and I would just look out the window and I'd see Dana. And I would say, oh, what about this? What about that? And I worry that for young people today, when they're accepting a job where they're working in their basement or kitchen or whatever it might be, how is that going to happen for them?
No, exactly. And, you know, I think work is much more than work. And I think we know that, right? I mean, it's been such an important part of my life. It's been incredibly rewarding. And it's a big part of who I am. And so... not having that, or not having that real bond and real passion about what you do, I think is really sad and unfortunate, for sure.
So let's go back to you. We're going to come back to this topic.
So so you'd asked about sort of, you know, the transition. So I was recruited from university into EDS, and then I was recruited from EDS to go into American Express, and I think it was the right time for me. I was ready for that next step. And with American Express, there was a great brand and a team of people that I was very impressed by, and the opportunity to expand and grow. So I took on the government of Canada, and I believe continues to be a very large client of American Express in Canada. I took on that relationship and I managed that for about 3 years. And in doing so, that's where I met Hervé, the current CEO of Emerald. I chose to put my hand in the ring for a meetings and events role that was opening up. It was a North American meetings and events role. I knew nothing but meetings and events. I knew that it was about a couple hundred employees that were needing of some love and attention. And it was a business unit that had been had not been a major focus for American Express. Obviously, corporate card, consumer card, and travel were the primary focus business units. And so I took on a role. I thought it would be an 18-month gig where I'd sort of come in, make some changes, put in the right structure, and move on. And very quickly, I built a real passion for the meetings and events business, face-to-face, the passion and the level of commitment that meeting professionals have for events, their commitment to deliver that experience for their clients, and doing so in what was an international team that we ended up at about 2,500 employees in about 40 countries, some proprietary, some not. I just absolutely fell in love with it, and it's why I chose to stay in the industry.
And you must have been doing something right, because you kept rising up the ladder and you had a really long and successful run there.
Things were going incredibly well. We had the opportunity to brand the business as American Express Meetings and Events. And we globalized, so we went from a 2-market operation to a 40-market operation, and we grew both, I would say, from a geographical perspective, but also segment-wise, where we identified the middle market small business segment as one where real discipline in meetings management was needed, both on the corporate side and also externally. And it was, I would say, double-digit growth consistently for most of the years that I was there. And so it was very rewarding. And to see the transformation of the brand from the eyes, not just from, you know, from the eyes of the P&L and looking at it from a leadership perspective, but from the eyes of the employees, when you see their growth, their transformation, when you look at the supplier community that we were working with and how we changed from their eyes, you know, from being a very small part of American Express to being one of the industry leaders, if not the largest global player in that space.
So today, Emerald competes at the highest level and is really creme de la creme, certainly in the States, playing increasingly. I guess part of the reason why we were attractive was a global footprint. Mm-hmm. Who were your competitors back then at American Express?
At that time at American Express, I would say there were international players that were affiliated with the travel management companies. So Carlson, Wagon Lee, BCD, HRG were the large meetings and events players that were affiliated with large travel management companies. And then you had agencies, I would say local agencies, creative agencies were a competitor. And then you had the local regional sourcing houses that would source venues and hotels that were competed on parts of the business.
Gotcha. And over the course of running so many meetings, and you said you grew from two offices, give or take, to 40 some odd, lots of things go right, but once in a while, something goes wrong. Give us a story where somewhere along the line, something, and you don't have to name names, this is not a, you know, we're not on Bravo, this is not an expose, yeah, but sometimes things go wrong.
It's a really good question, because I would say things went wrong all the time. I mean, that's the nature of our business. I think one of the benefits of being a growing business unit within a very large corporation is that you're also given a lot of leeway and a lot of time and space to experiment. And I think, you know, I can't think of a specific, but I can think of one of the business units that we launched, which is the middle market small business segment. I think if we were in a different corporation where the patience wasn't there, and if we didn't have the runway that we did, you know, our initial plan was a 3-year plan to essentially get to the point of arrival in terms of just the entry level. And it took us 5 years. So certainly we learned quite a bit in terms of the mechanics of what it took to launch and to grow as American Express in a new sector. But having the time, having the leeway, having the ability and the support to be able to experiment, learn. Sometimes things take longer than you expect them to. But that doesn't mean that they won't be successful or that they won't drive the returns that you think they will. So I think that patience and that support went a long way.
And you think you learn over time. There are all these industry verticals that within that world, it's a very big deal. Outside that world, no one would even know it exists. You know, when I talk about Advertising Week to friends and colleagues who are not in our business, you know, if you're not in the advertising, media, marketing, technology, content creation, and that sectors, you'd have no idea that we exist. But you saw that across a lot of verticals, covering large businesses and, as you referred to, small and medium-sized businesses.
That's correct. And that was the driver for the growth, is that approach across geographies and across verticals gave us that balanced growth to be able to deliver double-digit growth consistently over close to 10 years.
And there are some things, the power of live, that have remained constants. I just saw an article by my friend Russell Wallach, who runs Live Nation's sponsorship business. This was the biggest quarter they've ever had in terms of live, ever. Staggering number of people going to shows all over the world. The power of live remains, but you've also witnessed and had a front seat to how technology has grown. Talk about the influence of technology, good and bad, and where it's not been terribly relevant at all, where, you know, that notion of people gathering in a place, being with their colleagues, being with their clients and customers, that sort of remained a constant. I don't want to say immune from technology, but there is that human piece of it that is different.
It is absolutely different. And when you look at the industry, and now I'll sort of take a broader view of it, when you think about meetings, incentives, conferences and exhibitions, so the MICE industry as a whole, and you look at technology adoption, I think the industry has absolutely lagged in technology adoption. And you see that across the board from back office systems to the front office experience. There's absolutely a significant opportunity for the industry to make a step forward, invest in technology, streamline some of the back office processes that can be manual in nature. And we know how much manual process exists in this industry. I think we also had a missed opportunity during the pandemic because we had this whole quote-unquote pivot to virtual. We went to virtual. For many people, it was a bad experience. And we went back to live, which was great and what was needed, but we almost forgot everything that we learned in terms of virtual. And I think there is absolutely opportunity on the virtual side to repurpose content, to leverage the value of what's happening live, to be able to extend that to a broader audience, an audience that might not be able to attend your event. So I think as an industry, we have opportunity for leveraging tech for the benefits of our stakeholders, our attendees, and our exhibitors. When you look at some of the basic things today, whether it be lead generation or mobile apps at events, we have a long way to go. When you compare the consumer experience and how powerful that is, and you compare it to our experience as attendees or as exhibitors, I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think if you look at it in the context of value, that we're adding more value to our attendees, more value to our exhibitors, then you can offset those investments with more value from your clients.
Well, I think, you know, and you touched on it, you know, today's consumer is used to a very high level of production value. And, you know, before Emerald acquired us, we got through the pandemic making the requisite pivot to digital. And this may not be how they teach it in the great business schools, but I always say that we did it less worse than a lot of other people. I didn't think any of it was great or a replacement for the power of live, but leveraging technology to extend that experience. You know, Advertising Week here in New York will be in our 20th year in October. The curtain comes up, the curtain goes down, it's 4 days, it's 361 days till the next live event. And maintaining that connectivity in between, that's where I agree with you. I think there's a lot of upside to technology. Good. Okay, so let's talk about a gentleman that you referenced earlier who you met at American Express, who's been a big part of your business life and leads us here at Emerald, and that's Hervé. Talk about that first meeting when you first
My first meeting with Hervé. I've known Hervé now for, we're 2024, I would probably say 2006, 2007. So it's been a while. It's almost 20 years. I think when I first met Hervé, I don't think he, frankly, liked me. So I think it was one of those things where we built our relationship over time, and through mutual experiences, we went through a number of tough situations together. And I think going through those builds that bond and that confidence and trust and that respect. And, you know, as I've grown and matured in my career, working with people that I respect, working with like-minded people, gains, you know, a higher and higher importance. So when Hervé joined Emerald, it was a pretty easy decision for me. I had stayed at American Express after he left. We were spun off into a separate company. So I was I worked at American Express and the spinoff after Hervé left for about 6 years, and I was essentially on my own, just given the size of the business unit and how it operated within the overall company. So I was looking forward to working with someone that I have so much respect for, and having a partner at work.
And somewhere you had an entrepreneurial bug, AZTQ. That was your puppy.
I did. So there are a couple of companies that are still going concerns, and they're in the event management spaces, corporate event management, and also we own a couple of trade shows as part of AZTQ. So
fantastic. And at some point, you get a phone call from Hervé when he joins Emerald. I want you here.
Essentially, it was that. Yeah, I mean, I had an idea that he was considering moving here, and he had mentioned that he'd love to work together again, and I was equally in the same headspace. Right, it was one of those things where it was the right opportunity. I saw a lot of potential at Emerald, the opportunity for growth, but equally I saw a lot that was already there. And so, I was really excited by the prospect of joining Emerald, working with Hervé, working with the other leaders on the team. I had met them and was very impressed with the leadership team that they had at Emerald. So it all sort of felt like it was a fit, and it has been.
So let's peel a couple layers off the Emerald onion, which we really didn't talk about much when we had Hervé and David and then Linda Clarizio, who was a member of the Emerald board, who first put us all together. We knew Linda from her tenure at AOL and then at Nielsen. But Emerald is a big, big ship. Goes deep in a lot of verticals, a much bigger company, and has a much larger footprint, I think, than many folks, certainly outside the industry, know about. Inside, of course, they do know. But talk about Emerald and what it was like when you got here and the vision that you and the leadership had, and give us sort of a snapshot on where we are today, give or take 3 years later.
So if we go back to 2021, it was the worst time for this industry. We went essentially down to zero in terms of activity. And that was, it was at the tail end of that I had joined. And what I can say from an external perspective coming in is I'm incredibly proud and impressed by how Emerald navigated an incredibly tough period while retaining the vast majority of their employees, something that I think is unique in the industry, maintain such a large number of the employees from pre-pandemic, and then to see the comeback and the recovery and the speed of the recovery, it was just great to be a part of it and great to witness it. I can't really take any credit for it, but it was, I think it's a testament to the strength of the brands that we have in our verticals, whether it be design, whether it be retail, manufacturing, luxury. Some really strong food. And so when you see the strength and the tier one brands that we have in the sectors and in the communities that we serve, it was a very quick recovery. And I think, like I said, it's just a testament to the resilience and the strength of this company and the people and its people. And then, when we looked at it, clearly there was a history of acquisitions within Emerald. And I think mixed results in terms of how those acquisitions were integrated. And what we really wanted to do is to create a platform, an Emerald platform, that would support our existing brands, but also be that destination for entrepreneurs who are looking for a home for their business and looking to exit. And at the same time, what's really important, and I hope you've seen it as joining Emerald, is that while we believe in centralizing some elements of the service that we provide, when it comes to sales, marketing, thought leadership, closeness to the community, you have to have a dedicated team. You have to have a focused team. And you have to have a team that is embedded in those communities. And that's what the team did. And I think the results that you're seeing now in terms of the recovery of the volume, the recovery of the audience, which, as we know, audience return has lagged, right? It's lagged the sponsor and the exhibitor return. And so it's great to see that. And I think that comes back by being so incredibly close to the communities that you serve and by having the great assets that Emerald has as well from a media perspective and from a, you know, our content business or our commerce business, where we have technology that enables that 365 connection with your with your customers.
Right.
So it was really an end-to-end solution that I was very compelled by, and also having the right people, and then having a majority owner in Onyx that is so incredibly committed to the growth and success of this business and is willing to support investment consistently. So I think that sort of that picture that I just drew is what made it so incredibly appealing. And I think it's been part of the success that you see at Emerald. And also when you look at the next 3 to 5 years, we have the foundation and we have, I think, a track record and the potential to continue to grow and be successful at a similar pace that we have had.
So one of the challenges that we've had at Advertising Week pretty much since our inception has been the where. And we've never been hotel people per se. We've never gone. There are 3 big hotels in New York, the Marriott, the Sheraton, the Hilton. We wouldn't go to any of them. The Javits Center is big and intimidating for us. I know Emerald is a huge player at the Javits Center and convention centers around the country. Talk about that balance between creating an experience that's unique and powerful and compelling and creating an environment, the where the events are held. You create a lot of soul with the events like the Pizza Expo. You know, passion really, really captured and has such relevance and resonance. I find when you go to a place like, you know, the Las Vegas Convention Center or some of these other places, it takes a lot of work to put soul into these places.
I mean, I think, I think about it at many different levels. It's a great question because when you think about the commercial elements and even the commercial models of these different venues, they're very different when you go from a convention center to a hotel to a standalone venue. And you're right, the experience can vary. The level of investment you might have to put in to customize or to create that experience can be significant the more standard that venue is. Convention centers for, I would say, the very large events are to be able to accommodate the volume of attendees, the movement of the show in and the movement of the show out. I mean, you're talking about significant tonnage of product and people coming in and exiting. So definitely convention centers are a big part of what Emerald does, but we leverage hotels and unique venues. And I certainly understand and appreciate that the flexibility that you would have in a unique venue versus what you would be able to execute on in a hotel or in a convention center that's looking to move people out and bring in the next tenant. And it's typically they're either government owned or they have, you know, yield targets that sort of drive a certain pattern and behavior in terms of how you book the event, how you move in and how you move out. So I understand all of that, but I think you make a great point. I think New York, however, I should say, is a unique market, adding even more complexity because of the low number of hotels and options are pretty limited.
Well, it is amazing. I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I grew up here. My family is from Brooklyn. I grew up in Queens. I've been here my whole life. And I find it almost embarrassing that here we are, America's ostensibly on paper, you know, number one city, right? One of the great world cities, New York, London, Paris. And our convention center, I'm going to take a guess, we're somewhere between 20 and 40 in terms of the size in American cities now. We're nowhere near the top 10.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, but places like New Orleans that have invested, you know, in their community, even Portland where we were last year, you know, of course Las Vegas, Chicago, Miami, New York City, our convention center, and I think some of it, and here I know a little bit too much, but the combination of state governance and a property that's in the city, and even when you have a Democratic governor and mayor or a Republican governor and mayor, they're still at odds, state versus city. And now here in New York, we've seen so much development around the Javits Center, it really can't grow very much anymore. There's too much around it. They did open up one new wing, which Hervé took me to, which I thought was really beautiful. But that's a big challenge here in New York. Emerald manages to navigate it here and everywhere else.
It is. It is a big challenge, and it's difficult because New York is such a draw. People want to be in New York. We would like to have more events in New York. And in many of the communities that we serve, they have significant populations in New York.
Yeah.
Or at least a tri-state. And so having an event in New York would be something that is certainly would be added value as part of a portfolio of events. So, yeah, certainly opportunities in New York for sure.
Yeah. So we New Yorkers, much like Americans think the world revolves around America, New Yorkers think it revolves around New York, which is certainly not the case. So part of your responsibility and what you do here at Emerald is oversee launches through the Accelerator division. Talk about Accelerator. You've had some real successes there. It's very entrepreneurial. You're moving like a cheetah. A big company moves more like, you know, a big, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I don't know what the right animal is, but a big company moves slowly. Accelerator moves quickly. Talk about that.
It does. And I'm really proud that as of today, we have 14 active launches. So in the last 3 years, we've launched more, probably closer to 20 launches. 14 are currently live. And so really proud of the work that the team did. And the whole vision behind Accelerator was to leverage the industry knowledge, the creativity, the entrepreneurship, the resources that Emerald has internally to be able to enter new markets, to go into high growth segments that we might not be already a part of, and really grow the company through that organic mindset around growth and investment and researching new categories, bringing the team in to, as a collective team, to assess opportunities, learning from our lessons across the portfolio, deploying those into new launches that might be adjacent to existing assets or brand new assets. And now under the leadership of Kevin Gaffney, who's taken over the group, you know, we're very much continuing around that focus of launching new brands that are in new categories, but equally working with our existing brands in terms of are there any adjacencies or areas where their clients and their communities are interested in that growth. And, you know, one really exciting and congratulations to you, Matt, and the Advertising Week team is the Climatech launch. Really excited about that and the potential of what Climatech will look like. But that's a great example of a team that had a vision, an entrepreneurial team that had the connections within the community and being able to bring Emerald there to support that and execute that.
Yeah. Well, listen, it was a privilege. And right from the beginning, you, Hervé, David, the whole team could not have been more enthusiastic in backing us. You know, Gannon, Danielle, everybody. And I think what we did there very simply is what Emerald does all across the country, across verticals, which is create an experience, bring together great thought leaders and help pave the way forward for an industry, in this case, an important one. You know, if you're a parent or, you know, a grandparent, you care about the planet for the future. But the business of climate and technology is a big business. And I think Emerald plays in these verticals that either are legacy areas of the world or ones where technology is fueling change and growth. So it was a privilege to get to launch that as part of the Emerald family.
I think it's incredibly exciting, and I think there's tremendous potential for expansion within the U.S., but also internationally.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So give us a look inside the Accelerator laboratory, if you will. Are there certain industries or verticals where you see opportunity, where you could see us moving into? in 25, 26?
Yeah, so when we look at the science behind it, it very much starts with researching the community and the industry, the buy side and the sell side, and we look for fragmentation. Where there is fragmentation in an industry, we believe that we can add value by bringing the industry together. We look at growth rates. We look at the potential size of the market. You need to have an event of sufficient scale for it to be worth the investment and have the ability and the trajectory to grow over time. So, you know, we look at that, we research that. There's quite a bit of focus group work that happens. We also look to build a core group of an advisory group as we launch, people that support the concept, that are vested in its success, and that want to help along the way towards the execution. When you look at sort of areas that we're interested in, I would say cybersecurity is an area that we're highly interested in. Healthcare is an area of interest. Certain travel segments are of interest to us. Some commercial real estate that have design components could be a fit within our design portfolio. We really have a very open mindset in terms of the industries that we look at. But, you know, certainly looking at high growth industries where there's significant fragmentation, I would say, at a high level.
And the variety of verticals that Emerald plays in. I spent some time with David a couple of weeks ago, and he was sharing plans for this. You know, what are you going to be doing anything over the summer? And I guess we have a big show in the outdoor arena in Colorado, and he was going to go out there and spend some leisure time. But he was telling me about the show itself, that it's really as much of an experience as it is a show. And the interactive elements there, wildly different from New York Now that's happening as we speak here in New York, and the, you know, wildly different from the Couture Show or the Pizza Expo, et cetera. But it's a real jambalaya of verticals that we play in.
It is. And for many of the people that experience our brands or are familiar with them, they're more familiar with the brand itself than they are with Emerald. You know, when you talk about couture and jewelry or pizza and food, outdoor retailer in the, you know, in the outdoor space, New York Now, ASD in retail, we have some great brands, tier one brands that really stand on their own as communities and as brands and as leaders in their industries.
And I would think overall, I mean, you want to build the mothership, the Emerald brand, but I think on balance, it's the verticals. That's really what matters, because that's what matters to your customers and your clients.
I agree. I think from a community perspective, that's how I would look at it. I think from an employee perspective, from a stakeholder perspective, it's more of a balance towards Emerald. I think it supports career growth and sort of overall affiliation with your employer. But there's no question about it that these underlying brands are the core to everything that we do.
Yeah, that's the strength. But like everything else, as you said, it's a balance. All right, so as we start to wrap, if we're back here in the studio again, if Colin will have us again, a year from now, what do you think we're talking about that we didn't touch on today?
Well, I think what we're talking about is what a fantastic year that Emerald has had. Another successful year, great growth in audience, great growth on the sponsorship side, delivering on our commitments. I would say 2 to 4 new acquisitions. 1 or 2 might be quite significant. Entry into new verticals through accelerator and through launch, and potentially, I would say, expansion, a very, you know, purposeful, targeted expansion outside of the U.S., where we will see some of our brands expand into new markets outside of the U.S., in Asia, Middle East, potentially even South America.
Fantastic. We're going to keep going and growing.
We absolutely will.
And we are thrilled to be part of the Emerald family. Really delighted, Issa, that we had a chance to sit down and have this conversation. I guess we last got together, we had a drink last year, I think, at the Athletic Club.
We did.
Pledged to do it again, and yeah, it's taken us a while. So I'm glad we got a chance to have you on Great Minds here
Great.
Today.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the opportunity and I appreciate your time.
You got it.
Thank you.